You are back with The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is Catherine Cruz. State Health Director Bruce Anderson came under fire earlier this week. Lieutenant Governor Josh Green believes DOH has failed to hire enough contact tracers as the number of COVID-19 cases has risen to daily triple digits. Here's what Anderson had to say this morning.
We're continuing to see cases of COVID in the triple digits, and I expect we're going to see even higher cases today based on preliminary reports. And unfortunately, given the rate of rise in cases and the lack of enforcement or controls, I'm expecting those numbers will increase, at least until we find community-wide adherence to the safe practices we're recommending, that is the social distancing and wearing masks and not going to work when you're sick. Those are the ways we prevent the spread of this disease, and people are letting down their guard. We're seeing large gatherings, people at the beach, ignoring all those practices, and as a result, we're going to probably see increased cases, which is very concerning. As these numbers rise, our ability to manage the cases becomes less and less. In the area of contact tracing, for example, we've done a terrific job here investigating each and every case, identifying contacts and following up on those, and I believe, and of course, we're committed to continuing to do our best in that area. But as the case numbers go up, the contact tracing becomes less effective, and there are more and more people who are transmitting disease without even knowing about it. And obviously, if we don't know about the case, we can't do the contact tracing. And we're getting close to that point. Nevertheless, we have a dedicated staff, over 100 people here who are doing that full-time. We have now National Guardsmen helping with not only the contact tracing, but also in evaluating data. And we just brought on 20 new contact tracers who are going through orientation to facilitate their onboarding.
Help me get my arms around this, though, because I know Lieutenant Governor Josh Green has taken you and Dr. Park to task, saying we need to ramp this up. There are certain guidelines that, based on our population, that we should have already a cadre of contact tracers ready and waiting.
We are ramping up rapidly. We have on the bench over 400 people who have been trained in contact tracing, and we can bring them on immediately, at least within days, as needed. We have a contract with RCUH that allows us to act quickly in bringing on new staff. But as we bring on new staff, they need some additional training, of course, and need to get oriented, and they need supervision and obviously space. So we are looking at expanding our office space to accommodate them going forward. Today we have enough contact tracers to keep up with the cases. I am concerned going forward, of course, that we may not be able to do so. And having said that, contact tracing is certainly not a panacea to the problem. It is helpful as we do investigations, but the real solution to keeping this disease under control is to stop its spread, to prevent its spread. And the only way that's going to happen is if people adhere to the safe practices that we have in place.
The other thing that's happening, though, is that the delay in getting the test results.
Yeah, well, we're using the gold standard PCR test, which is used across the world, and certainly throughout the country here. It's the most sensitive test, and we can get a 24-hour turnaround time with that test. There is no rapid test available that's reliable. There's an Abbott ID Now test, which is popular, and it can get a result in 15, 20 minutes on a one-off basis. You can do one sample at a time, but it is not as sensitive as the PCR test. In fact, there's a large number of false positives, so it's not a good screening tool. It's not a good tool for screening people who may be infected who are not symptomatic. It's intended as a point-of-care test, so if you're in the hospital and they want to know if you have COVID, you can get a quick result that may or may not be accurate, but it's certainly helpful in making diagnoses. Well, on the mainland, there are so many cases occurring that it's not unusual to see a 5 or even 10-day turnaround time on tests. And if you were waiting 10 days for a result, it's useless to for the purpose of contact tracing. By then, the person is either in the hospital or they're through the illness. So getting tests quickly is critical to our being able to follow up with the contact tracing, and by the way, for treatment and other reasons as well. We're lucky in Hawaii to have enough capacity here to be able to keep up with most of the testing. The problem we ran into recently was the lack of reagents. There's so much disease occurring in California, Texas, and Florida, and a few other states that all the testing supplies and equipment are being diverted to those places where they're desperately needed. And Hawaii, for better or worse, has had fewer cases, so we're not a priority when they start distributing these reagents and things across the country. So we did have a situation at one point where one of the labs here could not get the reagents, and they had to then send the samples to the mainland to have them processed. And that, of course, took over 4 days, and we were seeing long delays in getting results. We did step in, and we did the testing for that company at our state lab, and we were able to get the 24-hour turnaround with those samples. It's a fact that across the country there are limits in the number of tests that can be done, swabs that are available, reagents, and so forth. And we've had to be somewhat judicious in making decisions on who gets tested, and certainly the broad screening that is being done some places is not possible in many situations here. But nevertheless, we've been able to keep up, and we haven't had a major problem with the testing. I worry about how things are going to go going forward, because we're seeing surges of cases all over the country, and often much worse than even we're seeing here. So that's going to be an ongoing concern.
Can we switch gears for a second? Because I know there have been a number of calls for triggers. I think Honolulu's mayor has said, you know, we've been asking, well, what can you tell us? Because we want to relax this, or we want to tighten up on this, and we need triggers.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we have existing triggers or in place. As we've gone forward, we've been focused a lot on hospital capacity. So there is good data on what it's safe in terms of a reserved capacity for acute care beds, ICU beds, ventilators, and so forth. So those things we're tracking very carefully. And by the way, we are very concerned about what's happening with these surge in cases. The acute care beds are filling up, and the ICU beds, intensive care beds, are also filling up. So this is something we're monitoring very closely. We are concerned that if these high numbers continue, we're going to run out of beds. We have a limited number here in Hawaii. We're essentially like a small city on the mainland, and we don't have the advantage of being able to transfer patients to other hospitals like they do on the mainland often. So that's a critical metric, but there is a threshold for that informs decision making, and we're getting very close to that at this point as the hospitals are seeing increases in admissions for COVID. About 1 out of 10 cases, 10% of the cases we see ending up in the hospital at some point. So if we have 100 cases, we can expect 10 of those individuals to be in the hospital, which is a significant amount. And by the way, the fatality rate's about 1%. So one of those people is probably going to die from the disease despite the best of care. So filling up the hospitals is a major concern. We do have metrics for that. What we don't have metrics for, and we are developing, are for some of the other public health measures. For example, the percentage of people infected by the disease is important. At one point, we were getting rates of 1% or 2% would be positive. Now we're seeing rates of 5% and more, and in fact, it's been higher over the last few days. And this is also concerning. That means basically more people are infected than we've seen before. It's somewhat of a crude rate because it depends on how many people you're testing as to what the percent infected would be. Nevertheless, we're seeing increases there. But we're also looking at turnaround time for laboratory reports, as we discussed earlier. We want to see those lab results within 24 hours, and we're tracking metric that would look at that issue, as well as how long it takes us to do contact tracing. Our goal is to be able to reach all the individuals who have been identified as cases within 24 hours, and also all the close contacts. And we've been good about keeping up with that and maintaining that. But as we have more cases, it's going to be more difficult. But one way we can measure the effectiveness of our contact tracing is to measure how long it takes us to identify all the close contacts of the case.
What is hindering you getting that information out in a good dashboard?
Nothing right now. We actually are collecting that information, and we've been using it, but it has been made public. So we're now going to be posting it up on our dashboard. In fact, we can expect an announcement in the next day or so that would be letting people know that we are going to be now publishing those metrics. It may take a little while before we can get them up, but we'll have them there. Another metric that we're tracking, for example, is the number of people who are currently in the hospital, and I think that would be of interest to the public. It varies, of course, and we're, you know, it's been 40 or 50 at any given time, but now we're seeing much higher numbers.
You recently had to use your powers to force someone into quarantine.
We fortunately have very few situations where where we've had to force someone into quarantine or isolation. The health director does have the authority to force someone into isolation if they are imminent or substantial risk to the public. And we did have a case recently where a young man was identified as positive and simply refused to quarantine himself and was effectively arrested and sent to quarantine, and we did sign an order supporting that action. It's a rare occurrence, but it's an important tool to have in place. Normally, we find very good compliance, and I must say I'm very pleased that people have been honoring their commitments to stay indoors and away from other people. But it's important to have those authorities if and when you need them.
What about in the case of, say, government workers, you know, who might refuse to take a test or refuse to be quarantined, even though some of their coworkers have tested positive?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand that we can't force anyone to get tested. That's a civil rights issue that has been standing for a long time. However, we can force them into quarantine if they won't comply. Unfortunately, that did happen recently with one individual, an adult, young male, who simply refused to quarantine themselves. They were out and about and hanging out with their friends and decided they just simply didn't want to do it. I did sign an order that forced the individual into quarantine. He was arrested, and that situation's been resolved.
Okay, but to your knowledge, has there been any issues with any unions at this point?
No, we haven't had any significant issues I know of with the unions. I think everyone recognizes that if an individual is positive, they need to be quarantined for the sake of the community. And as far as I know, there's been no union grievances along those lines. That may change. It's hard to know what positions might be taken along as it relates to a forced quarantine. We're seeing a wide variety of exposures that we haven't seen before, essentially people gathering for different purposes. In fact, the vast majority of cases we have are people who are gathering for a lot of different activities, including beach parties, birthday parties. We had lots of gatherings during Father's Day and 4th of July. And in fact, that probably started what the snowball we're seeing now, and people more and more becoming infected. But religious functions, home religious services, co-workers getting together without social distancing, funeral events have accounted for over 70 of our cases. These are multiple gatherings, visitations, and so forth, without adhering to safe practices. And, of course, meeting for drinks, socializing at bars and so forth is often a source of infection. And recently, retirement celebrations have come up as a concern. I suspect, you know, a lot of people are retiring now. It's often not a good time to be at work. So these are situations where people have let down their guard and have resulted in infections occurring. It's critically important that people maintain their social distancing and wear masks, and certainly do not go to work if you're sick. Most of the outbreaks and clusters that we have been associated with someone who's gone to work sick and exposed many others during that process. That's a hard thing for everyone to appreciate, but that's what's going to, adhering to those practices is what's going to keep this disease from spreading.
That was State Health Director Bruce Anderson responding to criticism about our contact tracing capacity and the rising positive COVID cases across the state. Anderson says if there was one thing he could change looking back over the last few months, he says he wishes there was better enforcement on the COVID restrictions.